Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Hello and welcome to another episode of Life After Corporate. This one is for you, my friend. If you're still in the corporate world or still employed and can't see your way out the door, and you're wondering to yourself, should I stay or should I go? Today, we're talking to Donna Starr, former corporate leader and now executive coach working with women who are just beginning and early on in their career, as well as senior women who are looking for what's next. All right. So welcome, Donna Starr.
I am so happy to be here and I'm so happy that you and I met. We have quite a bit in common after we spoke. And so I always think that the universe is so serendipitous to bring people together and to be here today and talk about my experience leaving my corporate job and life on the other side.
Yeah. And we were just talking offline about that song, Should I Stay or Should I Go by The Clash. And you mentioned how aptly named that is, because this is a clash of, you know, desires and fears. And that's what we're going to unpack for you here today. So Donna, as always, we ask our guests, what is your life after corporate story?
My life after corporate story is that I worked for 34 years on and off in corporate America. I started off in typical out of college, wanted to work in advertising, which was not very glamorous, but everybody thought it was. And the hours were long and I continued to move up in my career. I loved that. I loved just the progression and learning new things and seeing the transformation of the industry from print to all digital. I worked for an industry leader called Monster.com that really changed the way recruiting works. And I ended up being part of the management team and I bought into the company when we carved out from Monster and I was on the agency software side. And I knew as a single mom, and I think you and I have that in common too, that the environment in corporate was as high up as I was one of the highest ranking women in my company. We had a female CEO, which was great. My insides were not matching my outsides. And so, you know, in coaching now, I have terminology for it, but I did not know that it was never enough, right? And so my story is that no matter how many promotions, no matter how many accounts I saved, if I ran the biggest account in the world, no matter what, it was never enough. I was never satisfied. I always felt like I could do more. And I know that this is a common battle cry for all women, but we don't have to be that way. We don't have to feel that way.
Yeah, this not being good enough, it's like a systemic disease. I mean, if COVID is a pandemic, not feeling good enough or not feeling worthy enough is a pandemic of the psyche of most women leaders. And it's so funny because we've been unpacking this conversation for a while now in Life After Corporate. We talked to Amy Vodrick, who was a co-author of a book of not being good enough. I've told my story of being a perfectionist or not being good enough or fusing my performance with my work. And so if I made a mistake or something didn't go well, it meant something about me or that I am what I do. Did you find that too? Was that part of your story?
100%. And I would add to that, that no matter how many good things I do, and I see this with my clients all the time, you define yourself by the one not awesome thing that you have done. So, right. And, you know, so you could save accounts, you could be the most successful office, the most successful region in the country. You could be in good shape. You could do all of those things and you make one mistake and it's all you can think about. We are fixated on what we don't do right, not what we do right. So if I could do anything in this universe, it's to flip that paradigm focusing on the positives and learning from those experiences that didn't go exactly as planned.
And I want to hear more about, a little bit later, I want to hear more about what you're doing with younger women who are early on in their career, because, you know, I think a lot of us at this age, this stage, where we are in 2020 hindsight, we want to impart that to our younger colleagues who are following behind us. But first, I want to know, what was your wake-up call? When did you know that you couldn't continue on this path and that it was time to separate who Donna is from what Donna does?
That is, and I think I'm not alone to say that it was years in the making, but my wake-up call towards the end was that I was having some digestive issues. So I went to an osteopath, which I had never done before, and she had called out the polarity in my body being so out of whack. Now, if you don't believe in osteopath and energy and all that stuff, I get that part. But I knew the reason I went is because I knew something was off in my body. And when I accepted my last position, I had given my notice. We were acquired by a private equity firm. And I said that I would stay a year post that because you get retention bonuses and they want the management team to stay in place. But I knew that I wanted to leave. And I had bought into the company. So when I got another offer to stay and do this acquisition implementation position, I felt, when I got my offer letter and I asked more money in my offer letter because I had nothing to lose, like I was at my own funeral. And I just felt horrible, honestly. I knew I didn't want to do that job, and the job was just not a good fit for me. I did not like the job, but I was not going to leave before I did that first implementation. And then I realized that I no longer wanted to live this life. So my daughter was finishing up her last year in college. I went for a mother-daughter weekend. And our CEO, who's one of the best visionaries and such a proponent for women, also works 24/7. So it's not unusual. And I know many of you listening today can relate to this. I slept with my phone. We had global companies. I was on the phone at 4 in the morning, 11 at night. I was always on. And that was partially my fault. And I know we can talk about that later, but just related back to your question, I went to my daughter's last weekend in college. I got a call on Friday at 6. My daughter looked at me with eyes that I know many of you have seen from your kids. Like, when is enough enough? Like, please, this is our last weekend, in my last weekend in college, or my last mother-daughter weekend. And I didn't call. I didn't communicate back to the CEO. I got back to the airport on Sunday and I said, can I communicate with you about something that happened? She said, yes. When did you hear about it? And I said, Friday. She said, it's Sunday. And I said, I was with my daughter all weekend. So I started to put up boundaries. And when my daughter graduated, I said, I'm done. And that was my, I needed an event because I no longer was paying for college and I wanted to spend the summer with her. So I gave my notice right after that weekend. My son.
So it sounds like it was your daughter who kind of faced you and said, hey, mom, you know, where are your priorities right
now? She did. And then my son was home and I was working on the final implementation for, and I don't know anybody out there who would enjoy this job, but if you are, please contact me. But all the business systems integration. So we were switching over. And I honestly, just talking about it makes my head spin. And I had about 8 different work streams for this onboarding of this other company we'd acquired. And I literally looked like I was 85 and I came upstairs and my son happened to be home and he looked at me and goes, you know, this is not normal, right?
Wow.
And so, and my kids have seen me work all my life at a pace that can only be described as madness and workaholicness and all the, you know, nesses out there. And I wanted to, you know, be a good mom, obviously. So it wasn't that I didn't ignore them, but I was very driven, as many of us are. And he looked at me in such a way that I was like, I wrote my resignation letter that weekend.
Wow. So was there this back and forth, or what was this conversation like inside your head of, should I stay or should I go? Or at that point, was it pretty clear?
I knew I was leaving, but it wasn't clear cut until it was. So, you know, what I want women to know that are listening is that that conversation is likely going on in your head constantly. You're in a loop. you know, maybe there's a little break, and it takes up so much resonance in your body and your brain to live in that infinite loop of, should I stay or should I go? And I know that a lot of that conversation is, will I be able to afford my life? Will I be successful? Will anybody else want to hire me? What do I possibly have that others will want? So you change, you know, you have this conversation in your head that is very rarely supporting your desire to leave. So you're like literally fighting with yourself on this. And you have to, I think for me, I finally had to make the decision, like, I'm not going to starve to death. Like, I don't know why I'm buying. And I know, Deb, you and I have talked about this. Like, why do we always go to the worst case scenario? And so I do that with my clients, too, which is like, what's the reality that you're going to end up homeless if you make this decision? And by the way, you have time to make some other choices and get yourself ready. So for me, it wasn't a one shot. It was a constant loop in my head until I shut the noise down. But it took a while.
And it's so, you know, let's call out the elephant in the room, because it's really fear. Yes. And fear can exist when you're recognizing how powerful you really are and that you have the power of choice. And, you know, what I pulled out of what you just said is that, you know, you change the narrative. You know, there is this narrative, there is this loop that goes on over and over again. And I know I have a very dear friend right now who's out of work, and she's given a lifetime to her career. Her kids are grown, married, out of the house, and she's stuck in the fear of, I don't know who I am without having a job. Right. So what do you do? You know, whether you pull from your own story or pull from one of your clients, how do we get out of this loop of fear that, and I've had my potential clients talk to me and say, I'm afraid I'm going to live in a box under a bridge. And you know, that's not going to happen, because if you looked at yourself in the mirror and said, would I ever let myself live in a box under a bridge? The answer is no. But how do you get out of that fear state?
You take action, right? So if you're doing nothing and you are paralyzed, which is the main reason people come to coach, right, is because they're stuck, unless a company's paying for it and then it's in development. But if you're private paying for a coach, you really realize that some aspect of your life is not exactly as you want it to be, and you're stuck. So being my own client, what was the reality that I was going to end up homeless? What is the, so, you know, in coaching, we have tons of techniques, but the reality is you're not going to go from being in a house, being able to pay your bills with a roof over your head to being homeless. There are many, many, many steps in between. So if we're coaching, we're really saying, how true is that? And then we maybe make a plan and say, okay, if you really want to leave your job, let's pick a time, and the client always decides the agenda, in 6 months, what steps can you take to realize that not only is it not true, I mean, it is not true that you will end up homeless, but what steps can you take to shore up this fear that you have that you will be homeless? And then when you poke holes, and I've done this with a lot of my clients, you know, they realize it's not true. Mm-hmm. And then you build a plan with your clients to say, okay, you know, what are the five things that you can do, or three things that you can do to just take some action? Little steps lead to big changes. You don't have to say, I'm going to quit tomorrow and have another job the next day. It doesn't always work that way. But you can plan and take steps, and people feel more empowered when they take some action.
And it's about priorities, too. And I know we talked about this in our earlier conversation, is that once your priorities shift and there's something else that's more important to you, whether it's your own health, your own sanity, whether it's your family, when your priorities shift, you start making different choices. And I remember, and you and I talked about this, about like the designer shoes and the designer handbags. And, you know, once my priorities shifted to be in control of my career, I mean, did I really care if I was carrying a Prada bag or wearing Jimmy Choo shoes? I mean, it just didn't matter anymore. And it gave me great pleasure to like sell my entire walk-in closet of corporate wear. That was a little bit over the top. I think part of it was I felt so crappy being in my job and sacrificing myself that I would reward myself with these, what I look at now as kind of extravagant gifts. I really didn't need all of those trappings. It was just to kind of feel better in the cage I was in.
Yeah, I mean, you decorated your cage. And so that's such great level of awareness. And if anything has given us pause on all the designer consumption or any consumption, COVID, like who needs, right. Who's looking at my Prada bag on a Zoom meeting? So I do think that was kind of a level set. And, you know, because I worked directly for the CEO who was Prada wearing, Chanel, the whole thing, she never said you need to dress like me, but you sort of become that environment. And then it's like a status symbol that you have progressed in your career when it's really the wrong, I don't want to say it's the wrong measurement in that I'm judging, but it's not the measurement that I choose to be measured by any longer. And I think the word choice that you stated is exactly the right word.
Yeah. And it is a choice. And yes, you're absolutely right right now. As we're recording this, we're still in the COVID pandemic and it's all about tops, different tops to wear on Zoom and fuzzy slippers for your feet. and none of that costs a lot of money. So one of the things that helped me, and I don't know if we talked about this before, so remind me, but I'm a huge fan of Byron Katie. And if you're not familiar, my friend, with Byron Katie, she is the author of Loving What Is and the creator of The Work. And in my mind, Byron Katie is like the Buddha. I mean, she has cracked the code on your inner voice and questioning things like, is it true? So Donna, what you were saying before, you know, is it true that I'm going to be homeless? No, of course not. And there are choices, there are steps, but her way of questioning has turned it around for every single client I've worked with. And it's, you take the thought, you take that belief and you say, is it true? Can I be absolutely 100% sure it's true? And then to wrap your mind around, who would I be and what would I be doing if I didn't have that thought? And what am I doing now because I do have that thought and I'm believing that thought? And then the most powerful thing is she has us turn it around, right? So it's not true that I'll be homeless and living in a box under a bridge. What are all the reasons why that's true? And if our listeners aren't familiar with Byron Katie, highly recommend that you look her up. She does videos on LinkedIn, you know, just a great process for shifting your mindset.
Yeah, I agree. And I know that the reason that you and I met is through my coach, Tracy Litt, who is a mindset coach. So I do worksheets with her, which now I in turn do with my clients, which is, again, turning your beliefs sort of on their head. You know, the judgment words that we use, like, oh, man, I should have done this. I should have worked out harder. I should have saved more money. I shouldn't have said that to this employee. You know, all the shoulds, coulds, woulds in your head and really turning those around because that's just beating yourself up. And then I do another worksheet called Own Your Stuff, which is taking accountability for the situation you're in. Like, why haven't I lost the weight? Like really spelling out, I don't know why using weight as a measurement today, but just speaking personally, like take responsibility for where you are, take stock of where you are and make different choices. I think I am very interested to read Byron Katie because that's my philosophy in life.
Yeah. And, you know, whether weight's a great metaphor because it's what are you carrying around with you that you no longer need or doesn't serve you. So anything around weight. And I also want to shout out to Tracy Litt, my friend. She's amazing. The Litt Factor. And you know what? We're talking about coaches having coaches. And, you know, I think we became coaches because I know I became a coach because I realized the value of coaching to really shift your mindset and shift your trajectory, whether that's career, lifestyle, relationships. And so it's just so important. So I veered way off path here and no. I want to come back to, so we talked about changing the narrative. Mm-hmm. And when we start our conversation, we start talking about younger women. Yep. And sometimes I feel really badly because I feel like the mistakes that we made in our path by sacrificing everything for a career sent a message to a generation behind us or two generations behind us. And I see a lot of young women today struggling with sacrificing relationships and struggling to get that career identity. So I'm really curious, what do you find is going on with younger women who are early in their career and how do you work with them?
Yeah, so that is one of the most profound things that's happened to me post-corporate is I came out and wanted to be an executive coach because I believed as a female executive that I had been in your shoes and could help you. And that is in fact true. What I didn't expect was that I would have this pull to also the, you know, 23 to 20, you know, or 30 year olds. And that came to me because, and this is important because I lost my mom right when I graduated college. I had two older brothers and a dad, and I didn't really have that female influence. And off I went to my first job, and immediately I was overworking. I just couldn't help myself. And I think it helped me get ahead at that time in my life. And my daughter just graduated college, and I was coaching a lot of them because my background is in servicing talent acquisition. So I was prepping them for interviews, and I was, you know, reviewing their resumes and really prepping them for interviews because not a clue, right? And I had had many 20-something-year-old women cycle through, and men cycle through in the years that I worked in advertising because it's such an attraction, you know, so many college graduates want to work in advertising. And I just saw how woefully unprepared, beside teaching you how to do your job, we don't at all teach you how to do life. You know, how do you dress for work? I can't believe how many conversations I had with women when they worked for me, young women, about how to dress for work. Like there's no judgment here. Because there was no manual. Or how to communicate effectively on email. You know, the slang emoji world we're in, you cannot email a client, or you can if you have a better relationship, but it can't start out that way. And you still have to have grammatically sounding sentences, even though that sentence was not grammatically correct. So, and I worked in advertising. So my brain kept on clicking. And then I formulated this group in April for my daughter and eight of her friends. And it was fascinating to me. I did that free. I did it in 2 weeks. They all wanted to join. The commonalities that all women have start in their 20s. And I think we start to deal with women in corporate when we've identified that they're high potential or hypo, right? Like and that's just almost too late. It's not ever too late, but why aren't we starting them young? Why aren't we developing potential at a very early age versus just can they do this job? And, you know, I had some women in my group say, you know, I'm a new employee, and I've been commented on how I'm dressing at work by an older man. And they don't know what their power is. Should they speak in a meeting? Does anybody want to hear from them? So honestly, one of the most powerful things I've ever done is this female group. I just finished my first paid program for female. I'm extending the program. I brought in a financial analyst because they have no idea, many of them, how to manage their money. I brought in a relationship coach. I brought in a head of HR, and I brought in, I know there was another one, it'll come to me. But I mean, I brought in, and when I talked to some of my senior HR contacts, since I was servicing that industry for 30 years, they were like, you know, there really is not anything like this. We teach them how to do their job. We don't teach them how to do life. And we have some responsibility to this younger generation to not only mentor them, but to really give them a larger picture of the landscape. And they don't have to wait 20 years to use their voice.
Yes.
So they just don't know. And that is not what we teach them in college. And it's not what we teach them in life.
And, you know, most of us didn't know either. You know, let's face it, we were blazing trails and were some of the first women sitting around the table. You were fortunate enough to work at a company where there was a woman CEO. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes that makes it even tougher. So having these conversations early on with how do you show up in a business environment? How do you get that you know, to use a cliche now, get that seat at the table? Or how do you find your voice? How can you be effectively seen and heard? And how can you develop your potential? I think is super valuable. And then teaching about balance and finances. And I guess it's a way of giving back and saying, don't make the mistakes I made.
It's exactly right. And, you know, people look at people like us and they're like, oh, we want to be like you. We want to be successful in our careers, but don't do it at the expense of your, you know, I went through a divorce. My kids were, you know, they're amazing kids. They both graduated, they have jobs, and I don't want to look backwards and judge myself because I did the best I could, but I had limited resources to help me, with my career balance. And so if I can give a small amount of that back and I feel very compelled to do this, I feel so amazing about the work. I really do. And, you know, just being able to impact somebody's life earlier on. And I coach women that are in their 60s. I coach women in their 20s. And at 60, and I'm not 60 yet, but I am in my 50s, there's a lot more to unpack about the work I have to do. My gremlins have been in my body for a much longer time. And mm-hmm. fear, I'm not even sure where the fear is from, you know, because I have years and layers. And in your 20s, you don't have those layers. And so I think you can make radical change at any age, but certainly in your 20s.
Yes. And I love that because it is such an important need in the marketplace. Of course, I'm always looking at things from, you know, where is the market need? How do you package and service it? So I've seen that too. I have two nieces that meet your demographic. And I have one goddaughter and one niece. And I've coached both of them in how to navigate this stage and how to find meaning through their work and how to find purpose and how to find balance and have a relationship too. And the discovery process in working with them is always so amazing. So let's hop back over to the 50-somethings and 60-somethings who are wondering, should I stay or should I go? We talked about fear. We talked about addressing the limiting beliefs. What else gets in the way?
I think, and I wrote down some notes, but this one stuck with me. And I think I had a coach many, many, many years ago who said that very rarely are salespeople successful in another environment. And that was through some assessment work that I had done, and that had stayed with me. And that feels like a limiting belief to me. But in my heart and in my gut, and I see this from the company that I spent all this time at, I believe that employees or women become institutionalized, that they believe that the reason they are successful is because they are the environment that they are in versus the work that they have contributed to the environment. And that makes it a little more scary to leave because you're like, I'm successful here, but will I be successful or can I be successful someplace else? And the answer, of course, is a resounding yes, but that's a significant block that I believe women have to get through.
And it's not always their choice. Right. So there's ageism is a thing.
Ageism.
And And so many women in their 50s and 60s are going to find themselves encouraged, let's put it mildly, encouraged that their time is up, whether things get difficult or their positions get eliminated or any number of scenarios. And let's face it, in our 50s and 60s, we still have a lot of juice left in us. I don't know many women my age, and I'm a little bit older than you. I don't know many women my age who are ready to retire. So how do they get that, you know, what's next? How do they get to the what's next?
That's funny. Yeah. That's a good question.
Yeah.
So I agree, right? I was talking about it from my perspective, but there are a tremendous amount of packages being offered and reductions in force and encouragement to leave the workforce. And so, you know, I think it is good to work with our career coach or, you know, a mentor or whoever you're most comfortable with to figure out, okay, now what do I want to do? Like, once you get over the fear factor that it is in fact happening, what steps can you take to kind of shore that up? And I just had a call with a gentleman who's going through this yesterday. And I think just highlighting your skills and what, and we have a lot of tools in the coaching toolbox, but what brings you joy? You know, I think what brings you joy and passion can also bring you income. I mean, assuming that it's not, you know, bird watching, and I don't know how to make that a career, so I don't want to sound so woo-woo. No, not that there's anything wrong with that, but I mean, I want to be pragmatic about the fact that the skills that you've gained along the way, you probably haven't really sat down and thought about that. So I think the first step is really to keep a list of all your accomplishments, all the things that you've done that you're proud of, all the great moments in your career. And I tell people to keep a running list of that because it's good for reviews. It's good for a lot of things, just as a reinforcement about how much you actually have accomplished. So I believe, and this podcast reinforces it, that there is tremendous life after corporate, that you have all these skills, running department, mentoring, growing people, firing people, running P&Ls. They all matter. Everything matters, and you can use all these skills that you have acquired and really perfected over the years that you've been working into your next career.
Everything matters. I love that. And yes, there's many professional women out there, many executives, many leaders who have been working from home and who are saying to themselves, this kind of felt good. I had more harmony in my life, got to spend more time with my family. More flexibility. And that's the promise of entrepreneurship for women. It's your ticket to the C-suite. You're in charge. You are the one who is calling the shots. And there are needs in the world today. And many women who do make the leap are not only looking to apply their skills to something else that matters, but also to make an impact through the work that they do. And you and I had talked before this episode aired about the fear of walking away from the salary. And granted, if you've got, you know, a high six-figure salary or even a seven-figure salary, it's sometimes hard to say, you know, what, I'm going to walk away from that. And I think what we've found out in our earlier discussion is that the fear around that isn't true. You know, there's a difference in priorities. And, you know, I'm doing a training right after this called Six Figures in Your Fuzzy Slippers, because it is possible to make multiple six figures as the CEO of your own business using your own IP that you acquired while you were in the corporate world. So, Donna, any final words? Oh, I have one last question for you. Well, final words for any woman who is thinking about leaving.
If you're thinking about leaving, it means that your body is telling you or your soul is telling you that it may be time. Lean in and listen to that. Sorry that I use the lean in term. I know it's overused. Listen to that and know that there are support and resources for you and that you can thrive after. I think a living testimony to it. I know that you are. And there are so many resources to support you along the way. And do what's best for you. You have taken care of others for the bulk of your life, and it's time to take care of you.
It's time to take care of you. Yes, ma'am. What's your theme song, Donna?
I Am by Mary J. Blige.
And what line in that song really speaks to you?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It's a whole thing, just I am. You know, just because I'm having a lack of, they didn't print out the lyrics, but for me, it's about women empowerment. Nobody's going to love you more than I do. I mean, really what I'm talking about in that song is loving yourself. We tend to put ourselves last. So for me, it's an anthem.
That's great. I am. Well, thank you so much, Donna. I'm honored that you spent time with us today to share your life after corporate story and how you help others get to the decision of should I stay or should I go?
Well, thank you for having me.
Is there a way for people to get in touch with you?
Yes, there is. So I have a website, dstarconsultants.com, going through a rebrand right now. So I'm also very active on Facebook and Instagram, dstar801. And I have a guide that I just completed for 14 tips for corporate women to rise, relax, and enjoy their corporate career. And I've just created a group on LinkedIn called the Corporate Roller Coaster Riders. I know many of you are trying and considering leaving corporate, and these are resources that I'm creating for both of those events.
Oh, we'll put all of those links into the show notes. So if you're interested in downloading those tips or joining that group, we'll post those links there. That's it for now. Thanks for joining, everyone. And please, if you enjoyed this episode, consider leaving us a review in iTunes. It just means so much and helps other people like you find the Life After Corporate podcast. That's it for now. See you soon. Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.